a money ass cutter. Evans.
Now, hello to everybody. I'm with Patrick Mulcahy here in his home place in Killa, East Cork. Patrick is involved in bookmaking for Seamus and Ray Mulvaney. He has an honours degree in business studies. He loves to do some GAA commentaries and also has a few shows a week for CRY Community Radio. So hello, Patrick. How are you?
Hi, Sarah. How are we doing?
Good, thank you. Thanks for inviting me down to your lovely home here today.
Yeah, no problem at all. It's great to see you down here.
Now, we were at the Point to Point in Killa today, Patrick. It was a great turnout. It's a local Point to Point meeting for you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it's my local Point to Point meeting, a race meeting that has been running for 70 or 80 years now at this stage. And things have changed, obviously, over in that period of time. But I suppose the past 12 months, or the past couple of months, really, I suppose things have changed very much because the venue where we had it for the last 35 years has, we've been... unfortunately, the field has become unavailable, so we've had to try to find a new home. We failed in doing that for this year, and we moved up to the lands of Joran Breda Mulcahy up in Boulta, who were gratefully gave us the permission of using their land for the day, and great success indeed, and some great racing as well. And hopefully, we'll be able to show you maybe one or two videos of unbelievable. Jockeymanship and some race riding. It was a superb day's racing, and something I'll never forget. Being at a Killa Point to Point.
Yeah, there was a great recovery there made by a jockey today. There was an uproar when he got up to win again. What was the Declan Keeley, wasn't it?
Declan Keeley from Kappa and Dungarvan. Yeah, he's a brother of Tom Queeley's. For your listeners at home who may not know Declan as well. Lovely guy Declan, has been riding very well over the past couple of seasons, and has been taken out between himself and his dad, has taken out a trainer's license and a point-to-point handler's license as well, and they've been going very, very well. And the mare that won today, Ask Heather, has won her last two occasions already, and she won today the mare's winners of two races, and was cruising coming to the last, and just, I suppose, tried to unship, just hit the fence, unshipped Michael Sweeney, young man that lives only over the road from Declan Queeley, and did very well to hold on, literally around the neck of the horse on the wrong side of the body, but got all the way back up and rode hands and heels in the last furlong to get her home. It's one of the rides that will be remembered in memory, definitely not just because of Killa Point to Point, but in Point to Point racing circles.
Yeah, it was great for me as well. My first time in Cork today, so I got to witness that great recovery. So it was there was a great excitement there today. Now, your main passion, of course, I would have to say, is horse racing. So how did you become so passionate about the horse racing industry?
I suppose there's a small background, I suppose, that dads and my uncle would have had of interest in horses back in the 90s that we would have bought, or they would have bought a couple of mares at sales. For reasonably handy money, and we would have then produced foals then over time, over the years, and sell them on as foals in November. That's what generally we always do. And luckily enough, we've had a graded winner in Ted Veal, of course, who won the County Hurdle at Cheltenham, and various other graded races and the flat jump, over jumps, or the flat, I should say. And I suppose one day I shouldn't really be telling this story, I'm going to say it anyway. Had a second year economics exam in college. It was a mid-semester exam after week. I think it was 6 or 7. The week at Cheltenham was on. I was sickened because the one day I didn't want to miss out was the Friday at Cheltenham, of course, because you've got the Gold Cup, the Fox Hunters Chase, and a couple of tricky races around it. But obviously they were the main two that I was always interested in. Being of the Gold Cup, of course, one of the blue ribbon event, and then the Fox Hunters, the blue ribbon event for the Point of Pointers. And Ted went in that day. He was after having a good run in Leopardstown prior to that in the old Boyle Sports Handicap, now known as the Ladbroke, and was running reasonably well, I suppose, and finished a good third. And going into Cheltenham, I was looking forward to seeing him run. And I had that economics exam at 2 o'clock, and the race was at 2:05. And I just thought to myself, what am I going to do? I can't be late for the exam, but I still want to see the race, because he's one of our first horses that we bred that has such become to a big stage. And I just remember watching the race on the betting exchanges at the time, and then the result came through in the Sporting Life as confirmation. And I don't know, the exam, say the race was over 13 or 14 minutes past two, the result came in at 2:15, and I was nearly in tears at the back of the hall, and the teacher came down and she said, "What are you doing on your phone?" I said, "You won't believe this, but what I said, a horse that we bred has won the big races in Cheltenham." And it's something that I'll never forget. It's probably something I shouldn't be telling you, but it just epitomised, I suppose, the breeding side of it. And I remember coming home that evening, back to home, and they were answering phone calls all day and all night, Friday and Saturday. It was just of congratulations. And look, it's something unique, Sarah, because not everyone can breed a winner at Cheltenham, but when you do, it's the emotion attached to it is just something undescribable and quite priceless.
And more importantly, Patrick, did you pass your exam that day?
I did. I didn't have a good exam, just because I suppose I probably got turned against it. But yeah, economics was something I actually did like in college, and did reasonably well, I suppose. Both micro and macroeconomics. So it was something I liked, but it was just on the wrong day, really.
And just to touch on your college, you have an honours degree in business studies. Mm. Now, I know you work for Seamus and Ray Mulvaney in bookmaking. Do any of the skills that you learned in college, do you use any of them on the racetrack?
I suppose the business degree is something that's developing all the time, Sarah. It's not just where I use it in bookmaking, but also at home, you know, when you're doing, say, if you're doing the accounts at home for mom or dad or whoever it is, you know, just trying to use common sense, and maybe down the line, the likes of the HRs and the organisational behaviours, the way you learn about people, the way they react to different things. And I've used it on not rare occurrences, on the odd occurrence, all right, over the past couple of years, but I'm sure it'll become more fruition over the next couple of years as the working world is developing so much at such high speeds.
Okay, what made you want to get into bookmaking?
I suppose before the bookmaking, numbers would have been a high skill of mine. I always would have been very good at maths, and then the accountancy side of things I would have been reasonably good at, and I suppose just by default, really, going to a point-to-point one day with my dad out in Lismore in Waterford, and Seamus was just after coming back from holidays. I think he was in America for a couple of weeks. He was just after coming, flying back on the Saturday night, and came down Sunday morning. And so usually when Seamus was betting a point-to-point, he would always bet on the Irish track meeting, whether it be Navan, Fairyhouse, Turles, Naas, Cork, whatever it be, he would be betting on it. So I went up to him, I didn't have the paper with me on that certain day, and I said, "Seamus, do you have the Independent or the Times or whatever it was?" And he said he did, and so I got the runners, had a look at the runners, didn't fancy it, and so I said, "Seamus, thanks for that." And he knew me from being a kid. I was only a teenager at this stage, and moving on then, say, half an hour later, I came back and just had a look at the prices on his board, and next thing he asked me, would I be interested in working with him? I said, okay, I would. And so worked with him, just not a hands-on approach, but just more of a shadowing approach, I suppose, is what you'd call it. And worked with his clerk, Peter, and I think Whacker is a guy from Limerick that brings the gear around for Seamus. We were working that day, and I suppose, as they say, the rest is history. But I suppose one side note to that, and not many people know this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. I actually rang the HRI, because Seamus said at the end of that point-to-point, he said, "I'll see you in Cloyne," which was the following week's point-to-point. I said, "Right, okay." But I went home, I had no phone number for Seamus, I had no way in contacting him. And I said to myself then on the Tuesday morning, I said, "She's gone to Cheltenham. I can't contact them. What time do I need to be there for the first race? What am I supposed to do for next week? Do I need to do anything?" And so I rang the HRI Bet Division, tried to get his number, and I couldn't get his number. But it didn't matter. I turned up the following week. And I suppose a good pal of mine, Ellen Martin, brought me and is still bringing me to races ever since. But that's another story for another day. And I suppose, as they say, the rest is history, and they've been there for over 10 years now at this stage.
And Ray and Seamus, they're great to work for, and they're well represented on the English scene as well. They go to the likes of Chester, the Newmarket, Cheltenham, Aintree, and Ascot. Yeah. Is there any others?
Yeah, no, that's it, Sarah. It is, I suppose, before they used to work York as well, and different places. But Chester, the Royal Ascot meeting, the Newmarket Rowley course, they work at the number 2 and 6 in the Tarasols Ring. Number 1 is Royal Ascot and Aintree. And we work the March meeting in Cheltenham as well, of course, the Cheltenham Festival. And yeah, it's a joy to work with. We cover 22 of the 26 courses in the country. We've over 40 or 50 number ones at Point to Points, and we work at Shelbourne Park and at the National Coursing Meeting in Clonmel. And yeah, it's enjoyable because there's no 2 days that are the same, except if you win or lose. That's the only things that you can compare.
And do you take any of the responsibility on it yourself, especially with the likes of today at the Point to Point, for instance? If you're after laying something for a big liability, how do you feel? Do you get quite stressed, or do you just deal with it and on to the next race?
Yeah, you just have to deal with it and get on to the next race. You just have to, whatever plays up in that betting race for that 10-12 minute period, you just have to try and get as much over it as you possibly can. Does happen things that mightn't go your way. They don't go your way one day, it might swing around in a couple of weeks later, another Point to Point. Yeah, look, you just have to take the good with the bad, yeah, and move on with it, and put that race aside, and you've obviously another 3, 4, 5 races, whatever stage you are at the card, you've all them to go yet, so there's a long way to go. But yeah, that's how generally I would play it anyway.
Okay, so how would you compare a Point to Point meeting to the likes of a normal industry day race meeting?
I suppose, Sarah, since I got brought up at Point to Points, not that it's my livelihood, but it's something that country people have unique interest in. And I suppose, as an Irish journalist, Johnny Ward, I know you spoke to him on Saturday at the Betting Forum, he called on to our Point to Points 5 years ago in Killa in 2014, and was just, I suppose, amazed at the community spirit of it. And it, you know, epitomises how the community get together to run a local race meeting, which is a big deal as well, because it's not done overnight. It takes 3 to 4 months in preparation to organise this thing between sponsors, running the races, organising the races with the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board and the Horse Racing Ireland to get the money. And then you have to get your entries and jockeys and get in the people in the gate and the day. So like, there's a lot of things to it. But I suppose the atmosphere of Point to Points, because they're a community-based, organised and run thing, there's a lot of, you know, people from the community would always support it. You do get your same 40 or 50 guys that go to every Point to Point in the locality, but being that there's a community side to it, and not all communities are the same, but most communities would sponsor or would help Point to Points, that does help it a lot. Comparing that to the industry days, I suppose, not that the racing's not good, but I suppose there's a lack of interest in the industry days, I suppose. You know, the atmosphere may not be the same. And I suppose that's the disappointing thing. You would hope that the atmospheric side of it would lift up a small bit. And I suppose it's just now, I suppose, as well as Point to Points and tracks, that both now need to try and regenerate and rejuvenate themselves to try and offering the same product, but probably just in a different format.
Okay, so you touched on the betting forum there. One of the topics that was discussed there yesterday was the betting ring. Some just said that they thought the ring was dead. Ben Keith of Star Sports, he very much so thinks that the ring is still alive with plenty of atmosphere and money about. What are your thoughts? Do you think the ring is dying?
I say for the festival days, so like the upcoming Dublin Racing Festival, the Cheltenham Festival, Aintree, Punchestown, Galway, they're all still alive and kicking. The money might be coming down and going backwards, but there's still money at them, and I wouldn't say it's a dying game in that context. Maybe the industry days are dying because it's probably harder for people to probably A, get off work, or, you know, back in the day they might have pulled a sickie and get away with it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But that's probably a harder way in doing it. And people probably, with the crash a couple of years ago, the industry crash, globally as well, people lost a lot of money and probably are just trying to recover that money at the moment to get back in, maybe, into horse racing as well as other sports, but it's particularly horse racing, where a community base, a farmer locally would buy horse for handy money and try and run them at a point to point and sell them on then at a reasonable rate afterwards. And to say that they're both dying is a difficult one, because there's obviously a different atmosphere every day, but the normal industry days probably do need a small bit of perk up, all right, to try and get them back going again.
How would you suggest another young person enters the game?
Oof.
And would you suggest young people to get into this game too? Is it something that you would push on young people?
Look, if you've got an interest there, you have to join to try it out. You'll never know. Yeah, there's no point in knocking it until you try it. You know, it's a great saying, and it's true. I've seen a lot of aspects in racing, you know, at this stage, being with both my point-to-point committee, local committee, or working with Seamus O'Rea. You're dealing with a lot of the same industry guys that work professionally, day in, day out, whether it be the cameramen, the photographers, the trainers, the jockeys. We're all trying to get the same living out of it. And funny enough, mentioning one guy that was at your Betting Forum. Sorry, he wasn't at the Betting Forum. Sorry, I met him in a couple of years ago. And I won't mention his name, but he just said one day, he said, we're all the same clown. It's all one circus. We're all the same clowns going from town to town. And he's right, you know, that's what we are. And look, that's the way it is, I suppose.
Okay. So what are your professional ambitions over the next decade? Would you like to still be in the bookmaking game in 10 years?
Yeah, I think the bookmaking game might change a lot in 10 years unless people's behaviours themselves will change. I would think that maybe in 10 years' time, I would like to be still in the game. But obviously if something arose, that I might take it on the first bite, if I got the opportunity. But I would hope that in 10 years' time that the bookmaking business would be back around again, that it would be thriving in the betting ring, especially because when you go racing, Sarah, the betting ring is the hub of your racing experience, and there's no better place to be. Like, it's like going to the church, but you're not praying, or it's like going to a dance hall, but you don't go for a dance. When you go to the races, if you don't go to the betting ring, to the hive and the highly strong betting ring, I suppose, where people are running around trying to back horses, trying to get the best prizes, you know, that's what people can be missing out on, I suppose.
Would it be fair to say one of your ambitions might be that you'd have a pitch in your own name someday?
Probably not, Sarah, I'd say, at this stage, to be honest with you. It can be expensive to set up a bookmaking business on course. It's not as if I'm flushed with money either, which I'm not, but that's for another day. It is an expensive game to work in now at the moment, and the way we are at the moment, I think I'm happy enough the way it's going.
Now, I've been to plenty of race meetings with you. I love the way you get so animated on the box. They're at the Holy Ghost is one of your favourite sayings, I think. Did you learn that kind of way from Seamus and Ray, or, you know, when you were a young kid, did you watch men like that on the box and you just wanted to be like that?
Yeah, it's the latter, I think, Sarah. You, I suppose when I started out at 17, 18, 19, you look at all these people and just listen to what they're saying. And as you mentioned, that the Holy Ghost, some people will take that literally, as in you're taking the religion, the Catholic religion, in against the wrong way, or whatever religion that you believe in, that you're taking it the wrong way. But it's just another quick saying of that they're at the start, they're at the Holy Ghost, because in Ireland, when the white flag is raised, well, they're just about to start. So that's where the Holy Ghost came from. And the animated thing, I suppose, Sarah, is that I don't want to be standing in at a race beat with my hands in my pockets doing nothing being bored and just walking people walk by. I want a bit of vibrancy. I want to kind of create a culture that's vibrant, lively, and something going all the time. And that's what something I would hope that I do bring to the betting ring. That I suppose that we can, the bookmaking fraternity can just turn that experience for the punter that little bit more better, have a better day out for it. And I suppose that's why I'm so animated. I suppose not that I want to be boasting, but I do want to stand out from the crowd a small bit. I want to be a small bit different. I want to be different to a lot of the other colleagues of mine, and that's the way I read it, really.
And it definitely works, because you do have a lot of clients, and you do have anyone I speak to anyway always says the same thing about you, that you're a grafter. And you do always try your best. So, you know, it is great to see something like that in the betting ring. And hopefully there'll be some young kids going around someday watching you doing what you're doing and want to aspire to be like you someday.
Yeah. I say there's some kids going around saying, what the name of God, he's shutting his head off her.
Where's
the Holy Ghost? But yeah, look, it's not just, I suppose, the betting ring. I think it's the world as a whole, that people need to stand up for each other, and people need to stand up and say, we need to walk differently, act differently, but you need a leader that can stand out from the crowd a small bit. And I'm not saying I am that leader, but what I am saying is I don't want to be the same bookmaker being queuing up the whole time. I like being a small bit different, putting a bit of creativeness behind it, put a bit of craft behind it, and hopefully look for anyone that comes across, I hope I come across that way, for people that go racing, whether it be at point to points or at race meetings.
Yeah, and as they say, be yourself as everyone else is taken.
Absolutely.
So that's it. Okay, finally, Patrick, just to touch a little bit on how the horse racing game has changed. So since you've been in the game as a teenager, how do you find it has changed?
I suppose the online services have really kicked on a lot, and probably hasn't helped the betting ring as such. And obviously that crash back in 2010, 2011 didn't help things either, because people didn't have the disposable cash at the time to be going out doing their extracurricular activities, whether it be hurling or Gaelic football here in Ireland, or playing soccer, going to rugby matches, out for dates in the restaurant, you know, going to theatre, going racing, whatever it may be. They didn't have that money to go out with it. And I suppose just that's the way it has developed. But now that the disposable cash is slowly creeping back, you can see the people now are just starting to come back slowly, coming to races again. They're going out nights, socially drinking, going out to restaurants with their partners or their families. And you can just see it's now turning back around again. Obviously, people need to be careful of what they're spending their money on, and online services and whatever. But you would hope that in the next maybe 5 years that it will turn all back around again and be very good for the betting ring in years to come.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much, Patrick. It's the end of part one, and I know for part two we're going to talk about your radio station and your GAA commentary. So we're heading to your radio station. So thanks very much for having me in your home today.
Okay, Sarah, and we will catch up then.
Thanks, Patrick. Now we're back for part two here with Patrick Mulcahy, and we're in a different location this evening. We are in Yall in CRY Radio, community radio station. So thanks again, Patrick, for bringing me to this radio station. It's my first one I've been in. So how did you get into this this job?
Yeah, I suppose it goes back maybe 3 years ago, I suppose. And I met a guy called Barry Drake, who was interviewing me at the Kill a Point Point 3 years ago. And he just said, geez, you're very good the way you speak and the way you do it. You come across very well. And he said, would you be interested in coming in maybe on the odd Friday, you know, every third or fourth Friday to preview the weekend's point to point, or talk about something about sport and wise, because obviously I have a huge interest in sport. And so I came in, and for the first couple of times came in,
quite nervous, didn't know what I was doing, was a bit lost. But then after a while, I got the knack of it. And I suppose the key really is, Sarah, that you have to do a lot of homework and a lot of prepping behind it. That's the real key behind it. But I suppose just from the radio station side, I suppose it's a bit different from what I was used to, travelling around the country and, you know, working point to points. You're in a kind of a lonely room, sound booted, proofed up room, speaking to yourself maybe, or someone on the phone, or speaking to someone in the room with you, but you don't speak to a lot of people, and that kind of changes everything really. And it went down a hit really after the first couple of weeks. Enjoyed it first couple of months, and next thing I suppose, then I was asked to do a show on my own, then maybe 9 months later maybe, and that went well. So, but I've just, the grow or the love for it has just really taken off from there.
And is it a hard industry to get into, Patrick? Do you think if you hadn't have met Barry Drake that perhaps you mightn't have gone down this road?
Yeah, absolutely, Sarah. It's broadcasting is very hard to get into. And anyone in the broadcasting industry will tell you that you really are working from the bottom rung on the ladder. It's like snakes and ladders. You're working from box number one to try and get into, say, box number 60 to getting paid or getting yourself in the door somewhere, and then to work your way up then through the ranks to get up to the 80s and the 90s on that snakes and boards, snakes and ladders board. You know, it is a tough industry. You need a lot of experience. You need a lot of confidence going through it as well. Know what you're about. Know what you're doing. Have a good personality with your listeners as well. So yeah, it is tough, but look, hopefully, I've spent 3 years here and hopefully that experience will stand to me.
Would you like to do this full time? Would you like to cover more shows?
I'd love to do it full time in a full broadcasting regime. Obviously, where we are now, this is community radio, so it's all voluntary, pretty much. 98% of it's all voluntary, so the money we make is put back into the bills of setting up all the computers or working the studios or printing sheets or whatever we do. You know, that's it's a not-for-profit station, so it's community-based. You have to include everybody. Over 100 volunteers in the station, and that's, you know, that's the real chunks of the picture here in community radio.
Okay, so tell us about the shows that you actually do here for the radio station. How many times a week do you come in here?
Yeah, so I come in here on a Monday morning, midday. So there's kind of 5 to 5 weekdays. There's 2 daily slots where there's interviews and music done between 12 and 2 and 4 and 6 on a Monday to Friday basis. So I do Monday from 12 to 2, and that's kind of a mix of sporting reviews of the weekend. So I get a couple of interviews from the weekends, maybe point-to-point action if I was there, or maybe a horse racing meeting to talk about the Gaelic games or any big soccer rugby match. Get all them reviewed and play a mix of music as well. So a bit of chat music, 90s, 80s, mix it all up, you know, whatever people request for, they get. So look after them that way. Friday then is, I have a 2-hour sports preview program called Drive Time Sport, and that is on from 4 to 6 on a Friday, and we literally go hammer and tongs from sport to sport, previewing from top to bottom all the major events, whether it's local, national or international, and we try and cover as much as we can within that 2 hours, whatever the interests obviously the people I have, and I've got feedback over people or from people that what they want on us. So that's where that is, and that's going really well. We've got a couple of good decent slots. Again, Barry Drake, who'd be very good at ground racing, he'd be an expert in that. Martin Murphy of Horse Racing Ireland has a 20 minute weekly slot looking at the weekend's racing, and rugby, soccer, you know, you name it, virtually we cover it.
So you have a huge passion in sport, Patrick. Like, have you gotten into more sports because of this job, or were you generally always interested in a vast majority of them?
Well, I was always interested in sport before I even did radio or even started working with Seamus, actually, Sarah. there was often where I got up early in the Saturday morning to watch an Aussie rules match from Australia or a cricket match maybe. The Ashes might have been on over winter and you get up to watch that. Or, you know, the Olympics obviously is something I love as well. The 2 weeks was just non-stop sport. It's something to behold. But virtually any sport, I'd literally sit down and watch it, no matter what it is. You mentioned about any other sports I've got involved in. I suppose when I was younger, I loved playing hurling and Gaelic football in the local Gaelic athletics club. And I lost my way since I started working with Seamus. I kind of lost the kind of grow and love for that. But since I come back to the station, or when I made my move into the station, that love kind of for both hurling and football kind of came back. And I suppose that was the next thing as well. After me and a Friday, we have an hour and a half show dedicated to hurling and football played in both the local area in East Cork and West Waterford, in the county of Cork, and also for, on a national basis. And that's, I suppose, where I'm going to probably answer your next question. That's where my commentary basis comes from, because I was asked one night to do analysis for a game, or join in on analysis for a game locally at home in Killa. There was two local teams playing Yall. I think it was Yall and Carrigtwohill in a relegation game. And a wet, weepy, dreary night, but really enjoyed it. And the lad said, you know, Gene, you were very good, Pat. Would you come back and do that more next year? And I said, look, I'll think about it. So the next spring came and the first rounds of the championship that season kind of started off. And we then went off and did a couple of games. And I was trying to get feedback off different people to see what it was like. And they were enjoying it, just to clean up on different bits and pieces. But took that advice on board, trying to make constructive criticism a good way about it. And it kind of went from there, really. And since then, I have completed two Cork County finals, two East Cork finals, I suppose, which would be East Cork hurling finals, which would be quite big in our area. You'll have 2,500-3,000 people at the game, which would be very big for a local hurling game. And you would have maybe 1,000 people at home in the local nursing homes, or people at home, like, say, my own grandfather, who probably can't go to games or wouldn't go to games, now sits down and listens to all these games as I'm doing them, has taken interest now in GA because he wants to know how all the local teams are getting on, which I find quite funny, to be honest with you. But that's the way it has fallen. And since that then, actually just past September in 2018, I covered my first soccer match, and that was the Lee Miller tribute match in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. And it was something, I suppose, we kind of proceeded to do as a community radio. We wanted nothing out of it, obviously. There was no commercial gain to be made out of it or anything like that, just that the game at the time wasn't going to be broadcast free to air. So we approached the organisers to see if we'd do it, and luckily enough, the radio station asked me would I do it, and I said I would. And look, when you're growing up with watching players the likes of Ryan Giggs, David Beckham, Gary Neville, Robbie Keane, you know, you grow up with these guys in the 90s and noughties, you sit down watching Match of the Day or Premier League Live, whatever you're watching, and these guys are your heroes. And then, you know, 15 years later, you're actually commentating on the game that they're playing in front of you. You know, it's something I'll never forget. And I suppose as well, Lee Miller being a Cork man, you know, it took a lot of people to heart the way he died, cancer sorely in his life. Liam was one of the gents of the game, by all accounts. I never met Liam in my life, but from what I've heard, he's one of the nicest guys. And it's just, cancer is just so wrong, you know.
So all of the different commentaries and stuff that you do, Patrick, for GAA, for soccer, is it all linked through this radio station, so it's all aired out on the one station, or do you work for other radio stations?
Well, as at the moment, it's just through CRY. It was just that one soccer match we did, and in 2018 we covered about 25 GAA matches, and I commentated on around 15 of those. Between both hurling and football. So all through the radio station, all teams that would be local to the area as well, we would cover. And we will try and cover as much as we can that would fit into the schedule neatly as possible, if you know what I mean. So yeah, that's it is all local, but it is all great as well, because it brings people to the game as well that can't get around. And that's what I love about it, that not that I love doing the game, and I don't get paid for it, and look, that's not a problem at all, but I love, say, for my own grandfather or grandmother who don't go to games, who don't have a very much a keen interest in local GA. They might watch Cork playing an All-Ireland final in September, maybe in Croke Park, but when now say the likes of Father Neils are playing, a Hadder, Cloyne will be playing, you know, Yall or whoever it is, that they will now listen in and see, or listen to see who wins that game, and enjoy the coverage of it, because they recognise the names and the relations that they may, you know, I suppose they recognise the older people who might be that be related to the younger people, you know. So that's why they enjoy it so much. And I'm happy that they enjoy it. That's the most important thing, that once the people at home are enjoying it, I'll keep doing it.
Yeah, well, that's it. If you have the family support and that, and they can relate to it, and it's great for you as well, because it pushes you to do better in yourself as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Sarah. You know, it's not just about the radio station. It's not just about me. But once the people around me are all happy, that's the key thing. Like,
okay, so Patrick, let's just touch on the ambitions that you have for the likes of these commentaries and radio station. Would you like to maybe work for RTE? Have you any ambitions at all?
Yeah, I would. I'd be very interested. I see RT are expanding their league fixtures at the moment, so if they're watching, I'm hoping for debate. But anyway, yeah, no, I would, Sarah, to be honest with you, because it's over the past 24 months that I've really taken this on. It really has lit up a spark in me to really thrive in these, and I do enjoy it. And I suppose for anyone that hasn't watched or has seen hurling before, Sarah, it's a really quick, fast-paced game. The slitter can travel 60, 70 miles an hour up a field. And I suppose, just a story from last year, I suppose our senior technician here and the programme director here in the station, Justin, he's born in York, but he's been living in Yall for many years and was never at a hurling game before. And I said, look, we'll sort you out for a press pass to come down to the match, and you could see what it's like, because he couldn't understand the way we were talking so fast. People may not understand what you're talking about, but unless you understand the game, you actually don't understand why people are talking so fast. So if you sit down and watch a game and then listen to it on the radio, then you might understand. And I suppose that's what Justin took out on the day, because he went to a local East Cork hurling final, which would be quite historic and quite big in the local area. And funny enough, it was two teams that never won that title in the past 90 years of the championship. And the first thing he said to me after we finished the broadcast, he says, Patrick, now I know why you're talking so fast, because it's very hard to keep up with that, you know. And it is, but look, it's something I love doing, and just trying to portray a picture, trying to paint a picture for the people at home, even though I'm not artistic, but that's something I like doing.
Okay, Patrick, so how do you juggle it all? I mean, you're doing GAA commentaries, you're in a radio station, you're working for the Bookmakers on Course, you're not that long finished college. How do you juggle it all? Do you like to have a fast-paced life, just like the hurling match?
Yeah, I do, I suppose. I like to be doing something all the time, Sarah. I don't want to be sitting down doing nothing, unless I'm sitting down watching sports. I have to be up, out, doing something. And that's not chores that I'm talking about. Whether I'm working or whether I am, obviously, as you say, going to GAA matches, doing commentaries in my local GAA club, helping out the point-to-point committee. You know, it's very quick paced. I always wanted to do something all the time. Can't stop. You know, I've got that kind of, not the workload, but it's just that fastness in me, just to keep on going. Like, I suppose, like them Duracell bunny rabbits, I suppose. You can never stop, like, you know.
And tell me this, Patrick, are Cork going to win in All Ireland?
And All Ireland. Or this All Ireland.
Any All Ireland.
Any All Ireland.
In the next 5 years, let's say.
Well, say for this year, I suppose, Sarah, in 2019, in hurling, I would struggle to see him winning minor or under 21. The senior lads have a tough draw this year. They've got Tipperary in the opening round, which is very tough at home. And then they have to go the following week to face off against the All-Ireland champions in Limerick. Of course, backed by JP McManus. A very tough game away from home. They've been, Limerick are going pretty well. But you would hope that Cork could, if they can't defend their Munster Championship, that they can make second or make the third place playoff and get into an All-Ireland quarter-final. They were unlucky last year, really. I suppose they played the best 62 minutes that they played all year in that semi-final. But I suppose it was all about that save that Nicky Quaid made. Next thing, all the subs come on, Sarah, and turned the game inside out, brought extra time, and Cork were just out on their feet then at that stage and just didn't have the subs to bring on, I suppose. And Limerick did. That was the difference on the day. And, you know, look, you can't begrudge Limerick. If we can win in Ireland in the next 5 years, which I would expect that we would, and more than one All-Ireland, to be great indeed. In the past couple of weeks, the county board have released a football 5 year plan, and that'll be going through over the next 5 years. So look, hopefully we can turn the football around. It's only 2010 since we last won the football All-Ireland, and 9 years later we've got a rejigging of a plan. But look, it is what it is. And look, the county board are trying to do their best, the best. The players are trying to do their best. And obviously the coaches that don't get paid in most places are trying to do their best as well. So, look, it's tough times for Cork, but obviously it's tough times for everyone else as well that's trying to, who are trying to win, both Liam McCarthy and Sam McGuire.
I just want to touch on the GAA rules. Now, I know a lot of people watching this video might not follow GAA at all or understand the rules, but something that's been in the public eye is the rule changes in the GAA lately. Some of them have been thrown out since, I believe. So what is your opinion? What did you think when they made the hand pass change? Do you think that they should just leave the game as it is, or did you agree with the changes?
I haven't really studied the changes, but I know I've seen the hand pass rule where you can only make 3 hand passes and then you have to play the ball with your foot to your colleague or your the same player on your own team. And seeing it in real life, I thought it was a bit ridiculous, to be honest with you. And luckily enough, at Central Council, it got thrown out over the weekend, which was great from a footballing perspective. Hurling, I don't think you need to change the hurling. It's just the quicker it's going to get, the more fast-paced it's going to be, the players are going to have to adapt to it. And that's just the way it is. The only thing that will change in hurling is the different systems that player or that teams will have, whether they have a sweeper, whether they go 15 on 15, whether they play 7 defenders, 1 midfielder and 7 up front. You know, the different systems that teams have. So that's basically it. In football, it just needs that little bit of a spark where football teams are playing a lot more defensive. They're playing a lot of park the bus as well, and that just needs a little bit of change as well.
Okay, so aside from all of your sporting passions that you have, is there anything else in life that you enjoy doing?
What do I enjoy doing? I love to maybe take time off and go on a holiday for two weeks, 1 or 2 weeks in the year with a close personal friend of mine. We've been doing it over the last couple of years and really enjoyed it and love to do more of it. If only I had all that money, but I don't. But yeah, I know that's something. But I suppose coming back to the question from earlier on, the fast-paced environment is what I love living in and being on top of things the whole time, if I can at all possible. But when you're juggling so many balls in the one hat, I suppose it's hard to pull the rabbit out of the hat as well.
Well, I think you're doing a great job of it so far, Patrick. So thanks very much for bringing me into the radio station today. And again, your home as well. And thanks for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thanks, Sarah. And thanks to Star Sports as well for asking me for this interview. Hope you've enjoyed it. And I'm sure I'll catch you all very soon.
And finally, just as well, Patrick, if people want to follow you on Twitter or Facebook, are you available on all platforms?
It's available on all platforms, on LinkedIn for any job adventures that may be out there. but Facebook, Patrick Mulcahy, and on Twitter, at PAMUL Sports, or PAMUL Sports. So that's where you can get me most.
Great. Thanks, Patrick.
Cheers, Sarah.
New Betting People interviews are published every week at Star Sports. Exclusive interviews with the key people from the world of sports betting. Check out our full library of interviews at starsportsbet.co.uk. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.